Hey, Sharad, how's it going, man?
It's going good. How's it going with you?
I'm doing well, and we didn't even hit record. Our guest was with us, and you already started ranting about the weather.
Yeah, I thought that was a good way to start. And it is actually turning, right? So, topic of the day.
Yeah, and I think next 6 months, 8 months, whenever you enter a room, you're gonna say, "Oh man, it's so hot!" Right? That's the idea, right?
I will.
And so we have with us Sonia Nutani from Mumbai. So probably her weather-related pains would be slightly different from
Yeah.
ours. Maybe not during this time of the year. Maybe, in 3 to 4 months, she would have the rainfall and the monsoon to discuss. But today we are not going to discuss weather.
Yeah.
Today we are going to talk about Sonia's venture, Brain Gym Junior. Sonia has been operating in the edtech space for some time, and this is not the conventional edtech. I went through Brain Gym's website and also tried a few of their questions.
Yeah.
They kind of focus a fair bit on problem solving, and and not just problem solving in the strict academic sense, but to kind of make pupils and students understand the logical flow behind how to solve problems outside the confines of the school.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's the official description of the business, but over to you, Sonia. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Nikhil and Sharap. I think the introduction has been very interesting. I feel very happy when someone tells me they've gone and solved the problems, and most people feel really happy when they can solve a 10-year-old's problems. So if you manage to get it right, kudos to you. But
Let's
thank you
not
so
get
much.
into the solutions end of things. Yeah, no, I'm kidding. It was fine. I think it was okay.
I'm sure you get the answers right there, so that should
Yeah,
help.
yeah.
But yeah, coming to the Mumbai weather, it's turned hot here. We're at this moment, I was just checking as you were talking, it's 32 degrees, so I can start complaining myself, right? But so Brain Gym Junior is very interesting. We started it with the concept of we want to teach children how to think, not what to think. We just felt that there is just so much of instructional learning around the world. And I'm saying around the world, and in India more so, right? Because of the nature of how we are as a country and the way we operate in terms of education and our curriculum. And even outside the curriculum, what happened with the pandemic is we got this amazing opportunity to move things to a digitized medium, but we've largely moved to the medium being digitized, not the content. So you know what you're saying is you're still talking live classes or videos. It's not changing what you are doing. So one of the things that we felt very strongly about, and it came from a space of, I have now a 9-year-old son, but when he was 7, we felt that he's learning so much in school, and school is great, right? I mean, he's going to a good school, he's learning good, great stuff, but application of what he's learning is limited. So, you know, if I tell him, tell me the ratios of your pizza, he won't know it. But he knows ratios when I tell him what happened in school, or the lowest common multiple, or adverbs, or pronoun usage, right? And you know, coming from the conventional background of preschools and the like, I was an arts graduate from St. Xavier's, Mumbai, and an economics one at that. And you know, and yet when I took the CAT, in simple words, it was one hell of a shock for me, because I was just not ready for application and problem solving. Right? So these are some of the, you know, anecdotal things that hit home. And we launched something called you know, a POC or a pilot, which was a paper pilot. We just made our own website, put up something on Razorpay for payment, and we just went live on social media, zero money on marketing, and we got about 200 subscribers from around the globe, and we were not digitized. It was just a paper subscription. And we realized that there is a need for this. There are parents who understand, they feel the same pain that we are feeling, and let's give this. So, you know, and then Brain Gym Junior was born. I was in a full-time corporate job. Found a member in my last company, you know, had been there many years, was leading six departments under the gamut of marketing. And I chose to step down. We got some verbal confidence from some amazing angel investors. I stepped down, and we launched Brain Gym Junior. And it was launched on this POC and an idea. We still didn't have the final product. And we then developed it into what is today fully automated online portal. So what do we do today? Today we give children every single day a subscription of games. Okay, we call it games because these are game-based formats. So you'll have crosswords, you'll have digit cards, you'll have mirror questions and match the column and all of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we give you a subscription of games based on maths, mm-hmm. English, and real world skills. Okay, what do we mean by these three? Maths is maths as we know it, and it's just that what we do is we do study the curriculum across the world.
Mm-hmm.
So we've studied British, American, ICSE, CBSE. These are the four curriculums we studied, and we realized that, you know, mostly children learn same concepts at a similar age.
Mm-hmm.
You won't teach a 7-year-old something drastically different. It will have a 3 to 6 month mm-hmm. difference in stage,
yeah.
right? So we built a lot of our games around these concepts that you learn at a certain age.
Mm-hmm.
We also similarly did maths and we did real world skills. Now, why do we call it real world and not GK?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because we don't really teach you too much about the historical relevance of things. We end up teaching you real life things like currency conversions,
right.
Time gaps between countries. These are not things that you have daily exposure to. Not everybody has.
Yeah.
So we give you daily questions, which are in games formats. You come there, you solve. You are incentivized for solving points, right? You get more points if you solve on that day versus if you solve from the practice set.
Nice.
You are on leaderboards. You get badges that you win. So children are excited. They come, they solve. The daily questions don't take more than 15, 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So you come, you solve, you win your badge, you drop your leaderboard, you get your points. If you get the answer wrong, you get the correct solution. And our algorithm works in such a way that to you alone, that question will be presented in a few days.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right? So the learning is complete. Our objective is that you need to learn it.
Yeah.
You know, while all the good stuff of positive reinforcement is there,
mm-hmm.
We want you to learn. And we want to make it a daily habit, right? You come here, you do this daily, make it fun. We have a database of, as we speak today, we touch 12,000 questions.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a database of 12,000 questions that you can solve when you want.
Mm-hmm.
But our core offering, the way I see it, is this daily subscription that helps make thinking a habit.
Mm-hmm.
You have to apply your mind every single day for 15, 20 minutes.
That's, super interesting. And, coming from the financial services world, there is a very, I would say, unique takeaway here. I think there was a statistic which came in from Standard & Poor that only 18% of Indians are actually financially literate. And when it comes to that data point, I mean, they looked at four very basic concepts, you know, like how does interest compound and, how do interest rates affect prices and, how to look at your savings allocation. So like very, very basic, there were four questions. And based on that, only 18% was, the conversion. And me and Sharad, we often discuss internally, like, because we kind of had some amount of exposure to the Western world where, kids from a very young age do understand how money works and how, how to kind of look at money, how to view money. Whereas I think here, even young adults often struggle to, understand those, basic concepts. So I'll just kind of throw it out. Is financial literacy a potential vertical that you would look at some point in time?
It's a brilliant question. So, I've actually contacted a few banks
mm-hmm.
and I've said, listen, you put this, let's work together because of I'll come to my pricing later, but I'm very, very reasonable. We charge less than a cup of coffee for a whole, like what to charge you for one cup of coffee, we give you 1 month.
Right.
So, we're that cheap and it's so much more easier to tie up with an institution. And we actually offered these banks saying,
right.
I will run engagement for you. I will give you a separate section for financial literacy.
Right.
Because I'm so keen for children to learn this,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And at a very young age, you start basic concepts, very, very basic, plus minus to going to compounding, to going to, getting an inflation and a few of these very basic concepts. But, very honestly, I would look for a partner to do that with because not everyone, it's very difficult to break the market with the segments and niches. But
yeah.
Yes, that's part of my journey. And I'm hoping that someday somebody decides to actually tie up with us and take this forward. Because
right.
I personally do see this as a huge opportunity to teach children.
Oh, that's very interesting. I just want to sort of, Sonia, like ask you about the strategy behind the content, right? I mean, and the reason I ask is children is a very unique demographic. And, and let's go from the other end, which is the cartoon sort of way. Like the one significant way which they are different from is like they can consume the same thing over and over again. Adults typically after one thing, they move on to the next. But children can watch the same cartoon episode 5 times also. Like in that context, like would you, your audience is primarily children. So how do you sort of differentiate every day? Is that, that must be a challenge, right? To keep coming up with new content, or are you actually playing into the fact that, you know, you can just reuse the same content multiple times, so and that helps scalability in a way?
No, so it's very interesting. We haven't repeated even one single question.
Okay.
So it's I'm amazed at our own ability to create, and I say that I don't mean it for the founders, I mean it for the team,
yeah.
Right? And we have weekend brainstorming sessions on theme character.
Okay.
And because we do up to 100 questions a day.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So anything between 45 to 100 questions a day is what we do.
Yeah.
And the complexity decides the number. Not we have a minimum number that we publish.
Right.
And we try to stick to a theme. Right. And every weekend we are like, you know, we're brainstorming with teachers, we're brainstorming amongst ourselves, and we're like, aaj naya kya kare? And we've sustained so long, so I'm guessing that, you know, creativity comes when you push it.
Yeah.
And it happens. But you know, you've asked me a good question on content strategy, because we have two schools with us, okay, and we got them really early in our journey, and they've been fantastic for us. There's the confidence, seeing the engagement of children, we, you know, it's been a great journey. But what we also realized when we spoke to other schools, like it's very difficult to go and do non-academic content.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Okay, when I say that, I mean curriculum-based versus non-curriculum-based.
Mm-hmm.
Now, technically, what we are teaching has a shadow of academics, right?
Yeah.
We are actually sharpening maths, English, and real-world skills for the right age groups, for their children, of a given category, right? We personalize and customize, and I'll come to that.
Mm-hmm.
But we basically are giving things that children anyway will learn in school, and we're teaching them to actually apply their mind on concepts that they learn in school. But when you go and speak to schools, they are very, very keen to work with curriculum,
mm-hmm.
right? So we took a very, very conscious call saying, we'll stay true to what we are offering. The objective is it has to be over and above. We are education beyond academics.
Yeah.
And yet it's education, right? So that's one piece that I would like to, you know, put out there. That we, our core offering, our D2C offering is a layer of telling children, you learn in school, you apply on Rangem Junior, you win in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
Right, it's a very simple equation for us. That's one part of the content strategy that we have in mind. When it comes to repetition that you mentioned, we have 16 formats, and these 16 formats are completely coded and owned by us. So we are a product.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we are a product-led service. So we are probably a rare SaaS in a D2C space.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because we have a daily subscription service,
mm-hmm.
but it is based on a very strong product fundamental.
Yeah.
Okay, so in terms of the product, it exists. We have 16 different formats. We play with these 16 formats, crosswords, you know, grid questions and the like. So that does keep children engaged. You can't give the same thing to children every day. We mix and match the formats for different age groups. We put different things out there. We build a lot of images. So yes, while cartoons work, we build a lot of other images with, you know, visual aid based
mm-hmm.
images
mm-hmm.
where children can work and play with. So we do all of this to keep the engagement rate, the excitement rate, the novelty of it
mm-hmm.
out there.
Yeah.
So that we do work with that.
Yeah. You know, gamification has been such a big theme, right? Even for adults as well. Another interesting thing is, you know, since kids are engaging on a daily basis, right? You're probably sitting on very valuable data on it, and it's coming in every day, right? Because there's a loop that's getting closed every day. Unlike a traditional offline classroom, you're consuming, but then you, at the end of the year, you go for 3 years, three hours and try to spit it out. But this is on a recurring fast velocity basis. So that data, like, are you guys using that data to sort of develop profiles? And I mean it in a very positive way, to sort of give detailed feedback on what the growth areas are and things like that. Like, because that kind of data is very valuable, right? Especially at such a young age.
So you got it absolutely right there, because the objective, okay, for us is now we're moving this to, you know, our roadmap includes building cohorts around this data
mm-hmm.
and then introducing options, which are largely children related options for parents to move on,
mm-hmm.
right? So, you know, my age group is ages 5 to 11.
Right.
When that's my entry point. So I sort of, the children who work with me will sort of mature at 12,
mm-hmm.
right? So at about, we have a 13 and 14 year old also. So it's not like, but you know, if I had to put a large boundary condition, it would be 5 to 12 are the children who are with us. after this, and I know so much about them. I give speed and accuracy dashboards anyways to parents. Parents know exactly how their children are performing from a speed and accuracy point of view, how much have they accomplished, etc. Right? Now, beyond this, we also give points.
Mm-hmm.
So we are going to use these points for, and we're going to put up suggestions to parents. Think these children who could, you know, redeem these points and take on these two or three other courses or vocations or career options or learn chess. But we want to make it an education value.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we're going to work on, you know, giving options. And those will obviously be customized basis the children and their performance and the information that we're gaining from these children.
Right. And, you know, if you like, just take a step back in terms of, you know, the broad areas that you focus on, right? Like you said, math, you said English, as well as real world skills.
Yeah.
During the R&D phase for the product, what were the biggest actual learning gaps that you, you know, were able to unveil and which you tried to fix through your product in terms of, you know, learning outcomes when it comes to students or kids?
Okay, so that's it's a very interesting question again, because that's what actually drove us to do this, mm-hmm. right? So we found about three or four learning gaps. The first one I spoke about when we started Porking itself, but I said, there's so much instruction, there's zero application.
Mm-hmm.
So you children know definitions, but they don't know how to apply the concept. And what's the point in the long run, right? So that was one very, very big learning gap that we didn't have a problem with the concept per se, but application was a huge issue. So mm-hmm. that was a gap that we felt. Two was discipline. Children do homework because they're told to do homework. There's no, your auto mode is not to think of a solution, right? So we wanted thinking to become a habit, build a discipline, like how adults read newspapers. Children should be able to apply their mind firsthand. They should start thinking like this.
Right.
And the third very important thing is connecting the dots. So people learn, we felt children were learning in silos.
Right.
Okay. So you learned English in silo, you learned maths in a silo, you learned, but you never could put up a whole theory and, you know, think of it with children, right? You tell them you have to go somewhere, they won't be able to connect the dots of speed, distance, time. Itna time lagega, ye gift ye leke jaani hai, kisi ka birthday. There are five elements that play, right? A lot of our real world puzzles are based around all this. So it's connecting the dots in real world situations. So you're not up against, and like the whole international example I give you, when you go abroad, you're not only thinking that I'm going to, you know, UAE or America. You're thinking time zones, you're thinking food habits, you're thinking currency conversion. And we sort of introduce this and connect the dots early on.
Right.
And we felt these were massive, massive gaps that children had that they learned in school, but they could never take that thought forward.
Mm-hmm.
And our objective is to enable children to take that thought forward. So a lot of our questions, we counter question ourselves. We debate it amongst ourselves where we go, listen, is this too straightforward? Or sometimes, you know, our teachers will say, sir, it's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be like, isliye hai kyunki baaki to school mein seekh lega na. This is the objective. Is if we can't put plus and this together, then what is the what is the point?
Right, right.
That was a gap.
Yeah, like it's very intuitive that you know, you're encouraging thinking, and I'm sure it works as well. But how, if someone were to ask you, how are you actually evaluating whether it's working? Like, what the success metrics are? A kid who's doing those daily exercises with you guys versus a kid who's perhaps not, is there a way to sort of actually hence prove, you know, this guy is doing better or this one's doing better? And it's hard because kids at that age sort of grow in different directions and different paces. But how do you sort of, you know, what would be a success metric to see that it's working? Or qualitatively, we get it. Yes, it makes, you know, it makes absolute intuitive sense. But is there a way to sort of gauge that?
So what we do is, you know, I'm going to divide this, you know, success is a lovely word.
Yeah.
So what I'll do is I'll divide it into two aspects. I'll talk about children first and then I'll talk about the business or parental side later, right?
Yeah.
So for children, we were expecting about 15-20 minutes of solutioning, okay, every day. When we saw a mass audience, we saw children spending, there were 10% children who spent more than 2 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's a lot of engagement to get a 7-year-old or a 9-year-old to sit there and do this intuitively, whereas they are busy playing Roblox or something like that.
Yeah.
This was a huge learning for us. We were over the top, you know, when we saw this happen, right? So there were children like 50,000 points, 80,000 points in a day. So we thought that's a very, very strong indicator of personal success for us, because the child doesn't decide to enter this. the child only comes into play after you have, after the parents have chosen this for him or her, right? So when the child is sitting and playing, if no parent can force, I mean, I cannot force my 9-year-old to sit for more than 15 minutes. I can't get him to read a book, forget, force him to sit for 15 minutes, right? So if he's going to do this or she's going to do this, it has to be engaging them, giving them a kick of some sort. Is one side, right? Second thing that we saw is children writing to us. We have an ask thou teacher, okay? While it's not a live chat, it comes to our teachers. We find the answers and within 2 to 4 hours, we respond. We had children coming and asking us, arguing about doubts, right? This is not this, this should have been this. This is a level of engagement that has honestly taken us, you know, we've been floored. We've never been happier about it, right? So that, if you ask me, that's my success metric from a child engagement point of view. But for a child and a parent to actually evaluate it, we have 15 levels that children can climb. Okay, so what we do is, we have something called the jump test. You have to get X number of points or have spent X number of time before you can apply for this test. You take the test and you have to clear it to go to the next level. And we have 15 such levels. That every level unlocks a new set of questions. It changes the level of difficulty of your daily questions. And the like. Moreover, when a child enters, we give their option of either going age-based. So you have an age-based default level that will come to you. Or you take something called a free assessment. And this assessment is available even if you've never signed up. You go, you take this free assessment and you get a level. So you can be a level 5, for example, in English, a level 7 in maths and a level 3 in real world skills. Okay. So as a child also, you will not be perfect or equal in all your proficiencies, right? So you can actually be different. And two children of the same age, of the same class can also be different. So we give you this option of these, you know, the level automatically adjusting to your intelligence levels. Or intelligence is the wrong word, it's your proficiency levels. It's that exposure you have at that point in time of your life, right? And then we take you from there rather than lamenting you with things that you can't solve. Right, so we say it doesn't matter wherever you are, you start here and you move up. So that's the way we do it. So these are very small, quantitative yet not numerical indicators of success, right? Of engagement, of success. And as a business, if you ask me, it is a little bit of a disruptive concept because we are so used to instruction-based learning. We have a rule: we will not have a concept. We never have had one. We've not made a single call to anybody else till date. Okay. Now, if I've still got paid subscriptions coming from retail, for me, that is success. I mean, it's big. It doesn't come easy. And I've even got people purchasing my subscription on Amazon. People I don't know, obviously. So these sort of things, we've got some people coming in internationally. We've got payments from UK and US. Again, zero marketing there. It's all organic. India, we do some basic performance marketing for the last 2 months. And there, of course, we've seen the app download and all coming through. But the payments coming through, even before we gave a free trial, we started a free trial very recently, but before we gave a free trial, we had payments coming through. For me, you're a brand new B2C brand, you've never really, nobody knows you, and you've managed to get people to purchase your product online without knowing you. It's validating from a product market fit point of view.
Right. No, absolutely. And, you know, before we kind of dig a bit deeper into the business end, you know, one question I had was, you know, more from the standpoint of how does technology play a role here, in the sense that obviously when it comes to any kind of a content play, and I'm looking at you guys more as a form of a content play, right? Be it educational content. Now, on the demand side of things, when it comes to distribution of educational content, lots of automation is happening. And, you know, like you also were mentioning that the content gets tailored depending on performance of the student, and all of that with data can get refined more and more. The thing that is challenging on content is from a supply end, like who's creating the content, right? I mean, that is still, you know, even though, like you mentioned that you have around 16 formats, but that for me again is a kind of it's an output rather than an input. It's the format of the question that comes in rather than what actually is in the question, right? So that exercise is probably still done in a manual fashion. You have tie-ups with schools who help you, who provide you input in that. Do you see, you know, the creation of content, especially in the educational realm, to be an automated exercise at some point in time in the future, or do you think the answer is that no, it is not, and it doesn't have to be, because that's also a fair way.
It's a good question. So we, you know, my content is my book. And I don't tie up with schools for content. Schools are my customers.
Yeah.
Schools have bought my service. I don't have a single school tie up for content.
Mm-hmm.
What I do have is a very strong value chain, which we have built and where we do personal quality checks. And see, that is not something I intend to ever let go of purely because I can scale anything and everything in the world, but if my content falls, as you said, it's not worth it, mm-hmm. right? So what we do is we have a value chain where we have teachers.
Right.
So we do themes, we pass them to our teachers, the teachers are trained by us for the first 3 months.
Right.
And only then do they, we've got a step up program for the teachers as well. So we sit and train the teachers for 3 months where we partner with them on the content. They write the content. We do a quality check. It goes to another team who makes the imagery, the graphics team. They do a quality. Then we do a quality check. Then it goes to the ops team who does the upload on these formats.
Right.
Then we do a quality check and only then the content comes out. And right. we have a weekly calendar.
Right.
And we run on a full supply chain out here. Right. right? So we intend to own our content through and through. We have new concepts coming in. We have new formats coming in. We have new but we intend that this is like having the supply chain in any in probably a beverage business or something. That's mm-hmm. a core, right? At the end yeah. of the day. Mm-hmm. So we see our content ops as a very, very important and critical role for us.
Right.
Today the quality as well as the efficiency of this is closely held by us, and we intend to continue keeping it that way because content is very critical. Otherwise people will stop coming.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Even then, it's not, it is manual to that extent. So you might find a typo error which has slipped 4 levels of quality check,
mm-hmm.
right? It happens. I'm not going to take that away because you're churning 100 questions a day.
Mm-hmm.
And, no amount of size or scale can take away the checks, right?
Yeah.
So if you ask me, well, content is very critical. But, I will go back and say, Nikhil, that also our... Our software is very, very important to us because mm-hmm. today, how many people are doing product-led approaches, right? People are simply using a communication software,
yeah.
right? We are saying we are not a video, we are not a live class. We are saying that we actually own this. So if you ask me, my coded owned product has zero hops. So there is very little chance of anything going wrong in terms of a slip in between my experience.
Right.
My only hop is for payment. Right. So all of this is self-coded. It's owned by us. It's in one environment. It's fully scalable. My size is on cloud. So it's all of it. When it's owned, your product also becomes very, very critical to the experience.
Right.
Yeah.
So the product is important, but the content is what as a B2C side of my business, my content is king.
Mm-hmm.
We do intend to develop a B2B side of the business where we can even offer this product for people who want to curate their own content.
Right.
So we can also break it down into modules and offer it. But yeah. That's not right now. That we'll pick up once we are big enough on B2B, B2C.
Right. So currently in the current format, parents are your target customers or is it schools? How do you normally go around it? I mean, in terms of go-to-market?
We're doing both.
Right.
And like I said, we had an early win with a school which was evaluating multiple partners. And the reason we won that school is the school had a very strong stated agenda that in the cognitive development years of the primary school, which is 5 to 12 largely, which is what we are, our concepts, we want to strengthen maths and English. They had a very clear stated agenda.
Right.
So when we went through like trial by fire, right? Teachers went through our program. We had multiple calls with them, detailed questions. And then they actually ended up choosing us for primary and Infosys for secondary.
Right.
So that gave us a whole lot of confidence that, okay, this is a big win for us.
Yeah.
Having said which, our primary model, right, with the content, with the distribution, with the way we are working right now, it is a direct-to-consumer model.
Right.
What we've done is we've gone and tied up with a whole lot of partners who give us some visibility. We don't believe we need to create our own distribution. Okay,
right.
Because I don't need it. I am an add-on product.
Yeah.
I am supplementing academics. So, and we want to be very, very low cost. We intend to be very, very low cost.
Mm.
So what we've gone and done is we've done some tie-ups. We've got a tie-up with, say, Quicksilver. So we have gift cards that we distribute through them.
Right.
We have a tie-up with Visa across the platform. So everybody who has a Visa card automatically gets a 10% off.
Right.
I have a tie-up with, we are listed on Amazon. We are on Paytm mini apps. right? So what we've done is we've plugged into anybody on a consumer platform, because right. we know it doesn't make sense to replicate the business. There are so many people with so many consumer offerings.
Yeah.
We want to be part of their journeys and you know, and supplement it and add value to it. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, so I'm also talking to telecom providers.
Yeah.
Because today if you can do a content-based app, you know, why not, you know, doing it with Hotstar, why not do it with something like this, which actually benefits children.
Yeah.
Right? And you need that, all you need is any device with internet connection.
Yeah. Oh, that's very interesting. So, Sonia, what is the sort of next step? Like, how do you see BrainGym Junior sort of scale up and hit the next level? What are the growth levers? I mean, one is obviously you invest, keep investing in better and better content and sort of hit for higher engagement, etc., and grow, you know, grow number of people who subscribe. What are the other angles that you think can sort of, you know, either go wider into the age demographic or sort of hit international geographies more? How do you sort of think about the next 5 years when you think about the business?
Yeah, so the next 12 to 18 months will be more about going international. Mm-hmm. So the next 6 months will be deepening India, because India is so big in itself, right?
Yeah.
I also believe that, you know, we have a very strong opportunity for going into a little bit of social sectors, because I think that's where they need us the most.
Mm-hmm.
Children there don't have the access, cost. I mean, we suit them. For the intellectual audience, anyways, they parents are smart enough, they're choosing us. So we want to be available within India. 6 months down, I intend to go more aggressive internationally. I mean, we're already available in 30 countries in their currencies.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we, if you go download us in the US, you'll get the USD. You go to Singapore, you'll get us in, So, and we try to keep our content largely agnostic to countries.
Right.
Yeah. Right. We keep it as normal. We are seeing, we recently started seeing people from Cape Town coming in. So, you know, you never know what sort of people will find you where. So our objective is eventually to go global. We are a low entry barrier product. Like, people can come and choose us very easily. We are low cost, less than $5 in the US,
mm-hmm.
right, for a month.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's very easy to choose. Or in Canada, it's $7. So you just choose us and it's much easier, and you get one full month of subscription. So we intend to go as international and as broad-based. We want to play the volume game as far as possible. So if you ask me, 12 to 24 months is all about building that capability of mm-hmm. being going global, going deeper into India, widening our reach.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of beyond that, I intend to separate the B2C and B2B side.
Okay.
So my direct to consumer side will be this core offering. And then we've got all the software, we've built a product. We will then go to schools and say, listen, if you want to use this, we'll customize it for you. You want to believe this is what is better for your curriculum based thing, or you buy my whole package, which is my you know, which is my content as well, but otherwise we even do software.
Mm-hmm.
And lastly, what we intend to do is we are building a small, which I mentioned is the, what do you do with these points? How do I market, co-market to these same students
mm-hmm.
who I know so much about?
Mm-hmm.
That is another plugin that will be coming soon. So these are the three areas of growth that we're looking at in the next, say, 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think 5 years in a digital world is too long.
Yeah.
So I'm focusing on the 3 years, and we have our sprints planned for every 6 months, every 3 months, and we'll be getting there.
That's very fascinating. And maybe there's a merchandising and licensing angle as well if BrainGym Junior sort of picks up, right? And that's high margin business. Do you ever worry that sort of schools will sort of come downstream and essentially mimic the kind of things you're doing, but do it in classroom? And then, you know, it sort of becomes a substitute product rather than an additive. Because schools seem to be increasingly looking at gamification and moving towards the direction of, for, you know, moving slightly away from instructor-based. Is that a risk, or do you think that's sort of an opportunity? Like, if anything, it helps you to sort of license your content even better. Like,
it's exactly an opportunity. Like, so I see schools interested, but it does take a lot of focus and conviction and daily management for running daily publishing of content,
mm-hmm.
right? It's very difficult to do. And the way I see it, and I think that's why I told you, you know, people first do B2B, build their critical mass, and then go B2C.
Yeah.
I'm going the other way almost, right? Where I'm saying I'll go consumer, and then I'll start seeing in the schools. It's more about the, you know, we were at the tip of the iceberg after the pandemic of what people are open to in edtech.
Mm-hmm.
I think 6 to 9 to 12 months later, schools will be more open to seeing supplemental stuff rather than seeing it as the risk or a competition. They'll realize that, you know, if I can give a puzzle of 20 minutes, which is not academics, but yet helps my children become great in maths, it might just help them more, and I have a higher chance of being that plugin. I don't need the fame with it, right? Because I have my B2C side going. You use my software, I give you my content also if you wish, and you just leverage what I have ready instead of going and recreating.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I see it as a huge opportunity, and I think it's going to come. It's just about time.
Right. You know, you mentioned the pandemic, so obviously there should be at least one question around it. or naturally, you know, the entire space of education attracted unprecedented amount of, you know, attention during the pandemic, you know, be it from the perspective of VCs looking at EdTech plays, to general interest, to general levels of engagement across all these products. I'm sure in case of your offering as well, you must have seen a pretty interesting spike in terms of, you know, levels of engagement, and in terms of students being more and more, students and kids being more and more active on your application. But now that we are kind of on the crux of things, probably, hopefully opening up, do you see any kind of a correction in that, or do you see that has become like the new norm, that, you know, digital first, EdTech plays is definitely going to be a done deal when it comes to making sure that it's part of the overall educational package for a child?
I do believe that, you know, you wouldn't reverse time. Okay, you move forward. Certain things the pandemic has done to us, good and bad. You know, it's like saying, will people stop using digital fintech, right, or mediums to pay? Certain things you move forward, right? You don't move back. So I strongly believe that now, after you've given children devices, you know, and every family has had to make that arrangement, you know, whether you're doing it on the phone, or you're doing it on a laptop, or you're doing it on a tab, every child has a device. You can't one fine day say, hey, you know, child, today you've gone back to school, I'll never give you a device again. It's not happening. It's here to stay. Now, moving to what I am doing, right? I think I'm a supplement, right? 15, 20 minutes is easier than doing a live class.
Yeah.
And you are anyway going to class, you are learning. I still think that this might just be a good add-on for a parent to have for their children, yeah, right? We are in a space of saying 20 minutes a day versus playing a game, not just necessarily versus going to class, right? Use this time to play a game, and you'll add value. You know, an app which I really, really admire for being able to crack this is Duolingo. I don't know
if you've ever seen
it. Yeah, so, I mean, Duolingo did exactly this, right? They just said, listen, you know, come and play. I mean, you see the questions and all, it's exactly this. They just say, come play with us. 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes. I mean, they're not a daily publishing app. I mean, I'm just talking conceptually. You are an add-on. You're not telling people, give me a devoted 1 hour of your day at 6 p.m. It's going to eat into your playing time. No, you know, a parent can sit with a child over dinner, post-dinner. 15 minutes to bring him junior, sit at breakfast. We do it at breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the time everybody's sitting, you know, morning, naya question aata hai, dekhte hai kisko 1,000 points milta hai.
Right.
You know, so that's the sort of engagement that we are hoping to drive.
Right.
And I don't see it going anywhere. It's not, in fact, what the pandemic has done is opened up a mind to saying it is possible to move forward in your education journey, whether it is creative education, academic education, or otherwise, through digital means. I mean, that's just a shift that has happened. Quality, acceleration, cost, all that will evolve. But the mindset has been moved, and that's a huge shift to us.
Right. And but, you know, I'll just be like a kind of a devil's advocate here in terms of, you know, grabbing attention on the screen. It's a very competitive domain, right? I mean, effectively, like in India, I think an average person has 70 apps on his phone, right? That's the number. And every app, every product is trying to, you know, get eyeballs on it one way or the other. Now, I understand this is, Brain Gym is a different animal in the sense that there is there's a net positive, you know, proposition that comes out of it. It is to promote learning. It is to, you know, promote holistic thinking. It is not like a Hotstar or a Netflix or a YouTube. That completely point taken. But you know, you are competing against like a interesting animation video that a kid might see on YouTube. You know, that end one cannot control beyond level. Even though probably this is mandated by parents, so it's kind of, it has that official kind of, you know, stamp of approval internally. But like, how do you, like, do you see, you know, from a scaling up standpoint, marketing to become a large, you know, investment that you would have to look at? Or you kind of are of the thought that, you know, essentially this is a pure product play, and, you know, it's a case of like, if you build a bridge, they'll come.
No, so I don't think anything works like that. I believe that you have to market, right? You can't expect things to just come to you sitting at home. So marketing is obviously critical, and which is why I mentioned to you that in order to stay cost competitive, mm-hmm. right, and not pile that onto my subscription charge, my style of marketing is doing partnerships.
Right.
While I will continue to do my own marketing, but I want to be present where anyone has consumers, because I don't want to become expensive for the consumer. It's basic maths, right? The minute I start spending more somewhere, it will start showing in my product.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't want to start spending more and hence show more my product. I want it to be less than 200 rupees in India for a month.
So you would rather go for like complementary brands, complementary propositions, and yes. work with them, and you know, go native right. In terms of your approach.
I'll do both. Right. I'll do both. But you're absolutely right. At least visibility, noise. I'd rather do with partners, right? Why? I don't want to become more expensive. That doesn't mean I won't market. I'll try to find the most efficient style of marketing, mm-hmm. but I would like to keep my cost where it is. I don't want to keep that cost going up.
Right. And, you know, we usually like to ask at least one question on the investment climate. And is VC money something that you are actively chasing as of now? Or your aspiration is to kind of, you know, grow the business organically? And I mean, effectively, you're a subscription product. So it's kind of money on day one type of a proposition. So, I mean, how are you viewing the VC environment and any conversations that you have had to date?
Yes. So it's a very, very interesting. So we have angel investors, right? Mm-hmm. And they've been fantastic. They bet on people and ideas, right? They didn't really have anything in hand at that time. And honestly, you're right. We're a revenue, you know, we have revenue from the day we went live. It's how much is the revenue? Is it enough? Is a question that we can discuss. But the point is there's revenue coming in and we've got like lots of active subscribers right now. I can easily do without it for this year. To say the least, and that was our original plan, but we are considering that after our next product, core product releases, which are like two big ones that are coming in over the next 2 months, by April we might reassess the situation and in all probability go and pick up money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because, you know, the whole objective is, like you mentioned, you know, you want to go abroad, you want to go here. I mean, if somebody is liking something, you don't hold on to it and say, next year they can, you know, right. you will then go abroad.
Right,
I mean,
right. absolutely.
So that's the objective. The objective is mainly, the only reason I will take money is to enable scale and a big bang scale. And that doesn't mean I'll be advertising with IPL or anything like that, but yeah. I will be going, the objective will be more to market and tie up in other countries.
Right.
So these strategic tie-ups as well as performance marketing in these other countries is what I would like to ideally do.
Right.
So for that reason, I will be raising funds maybe in the second half of the year.
And in terms of competitors, any companies that you admire, you think that, you know, that's kind of a model which is something worth emulating? You obviously mentioned Duolingo, but in yes, you know, from exactly. from a domestic standpoint, any companies that you like or appreciate, or any companies that you don't like or you don't appreciate? I mean, you don't have to answer that, but yeah, the first one maybe.
No, so I'll tell you what I personally believe that you learn something from every company, right? I don't like or dislike anything of any company. I like aspects of what people have done. You know, like I genuinely, I mean, you also know what you will not do after that,
yeah.
right? I mean, you might have intuitively gone and done something like that, but you will not do it because you've seen the backlash or you've seen, oh, this is how it hurts people or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's where I'm coming from. No push sales, no call centers.
Right.
Right. Never. Right. I'll go hungry, but I won't do that, right?
Right.
So that's a strong statement. And I am going to keep this podcast as a reminder to myself because I'm going out in media and saying this.
Right.
But, so that's something that I learned. But I do believe that some people created beautiful categories. I think they've been marketing gurus. I think Right Hat, when it launched in the first 1 year, I mean, you know, they led a story which they created a category as well as, I think it was a marketing play.
Right.
And I think they did a brilliant marketing to start the brand new, to create a category and to not have a native product.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they were not, it was not about the product, it was about the service, and they were using a third-party product at that time.
Right.
So, I think they did a brilliant job of marketing. I mean, in awe of the way they went about it, and the speed and the aggression which they grew with, right? Internationally found their right market. So that's something that I have great respect for. I have great respect for Duolingo, I've already mentioned, because purely, it's pull, right? How many people have learned to teach you anything through pull?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is pushing. Right. I thought that's something that they've done extremely well. So these are the two that I actually look up to. I do see that in age 5 to 11 today in India, somehow, you know, you have things till 8, 6 or 7. You'll have like these, you know, cartoon game based things. And then you have after 12. Right. Between somewhere between 5 to 12, all you're teaching is either coding, guitar or chess.
Right.
So I'm hoping that people understand the importance of strengthening a base. You know, you don't want your child to go at 15 or 12. That's the age where they start saying, mujhe math se dar lagta hai. I hate numbers. Yeah. Or they are not great with English, so they start stammering. Right. They don't use it correctly. And then that takes away confidence. I'm basically trying to solve for that, saying, don't get, you know, overwhelmed. It's actually not rocket science. All you need to do it is start early. And I mean, it takes a little bit of an evolved parent to figure that. But I'm hoping I get there. And then otherwise, I use fun methods such as positive reinforcement, points, redemption to get there. But I hope to get there.
Right. No, thank you. Thank you so much, Sonia. This was very, very fascinating and interesting to hear Brain Gym Junior's story. And we'll definitely be vouching for you guys and watching you closely, and wish you all the best in your journey ahead. And thank you for your time.
Thank you so much, Nikhil and Sharad. It's been a great conversation. Glad to have met you guys.
Great. No, likewise. So, Sharad, this was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. And I'm going to go and do some questions now.
Will you?
I will.
Will you publish the results?
I will publish.
Okay,
the results.
Great.
You can WhatsApp me.
There you go. Thank you so much. So, this is Nikhil Arora.
This is Sharad Tupran.
Signing off.